So I want to get to some of the specific stuff that you talk about in your Substack. But I mean, I feel like the most pressing thing right now is a lot of this stuff in the news right now. I mean, there's the Rogan thing and the convoy thing that's going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm getting personally just kind of frustrated with a lot of this shit I'm seeing, because like, I shouldn't be, obviously, because there's just a lot of this shit where they're just saying the Nazi flag thing. You know what I mean? Like, they're just like, right. You know, it's so obvious that they'll go to that. It's not really worth being annoyed by, because it's too obvious. But I don't know. For some reason, I'm pretty annoyed by it. But
maybe because it's Canadians.
Yeah, yeah, right there. That's stealing valor. That's our shit. Like,
well, it's also like, you know, they wrung that narrative kind of dry a little bit stateside. And so now I remember seeing that and just having that kind of sinking feeling a little bit of just like, oh, are we just literally going to get like a repeat of the last 6 years, but they're just going to like send it to Canada where it's going to have like a little more novelty,
yeah,
and maybe more traction. Cause like it, yeah, still gets a lot of mileage here. Certainly. I can't deny that. But like, you know, people are certain, you have to admit, people are certainly a bit jaded towards it. And so it would be kind of maddening if it was just the same thing over again in China.
China. Man, I think about Chinese Nazis now.
Give it some time, brother. You never know.
But they are. I mean, they're just, it's just like Avengers 17. It's just, they're just juicing this intellectual property a little bit more.
This is at Trustworthy Slav.
This is at Incognito, COH.
CRK, black.com, build.
This is the Fed Post.
If you think about it, really the original Thanos. iconic.
Yeah, they're at Trump rallies, they're at Antifa like counter protests, and they're also at convoys. They got everything perfectly balanced. That's like their four fingers there.
They're well integrated into everything.
Actually, believe it or not, Nazis actually tend to crop up just everywhere where something is going on that I don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
pretty much.
You know,
yeah.
My ex-girlfriend's house, everyone hangs out there is a Nazi. My old job, all of them actually walk around with swastikas. The guy that cut me off on the highway earlier, Nazi, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's obvious why, because like, you know, I don't know, sometimes I'll check into these like lib threads because I am genuinely curious, like what they say, like what's their perspective on all this, like what does left say about this type of shit, because
they're saying the dumbest shit.
We were talking about it before, some of the wild shit, but I think in the worst lib ones, the obvious thing is like, if you're a Nazi, then like, you know, everything is justified, because it's like, well, you're a Nazi, so you know, all forms of like, oh, well, you know, people deserve to live or whatever, that can just go out the window. And obviously, if anybody can be a Nazi, then you could just slap that label on a lot of people, a whole like mass of people. So it's obviously like tactical, obviously. But yeah, it's just wild seeing them. I mean, like, especially like, because I was a leftist. So I remember when there was that Nazi flag at Bernie's rally. Like, I remember that shit. So it's just funny. Like, everybody at the time was like, oh, yeah, this is bullshit. And it was just kind of like, oh, it's just media bullshit. And these same leftists are like, oh, look at this Nazi flag somewhere off in the distance. It's just some guy by himself, like with a Nazi flag. Like, that shit glows. That shit glows like a motherfucker. Like,
perfectly creased.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't believe that shit. I mean, maybe it is true. I don't really give a fuck either way.
That's what I think Gian from Twink Rev, they were saying on the timeline today. They were saying like, if I wanted to discredit anything that was going against Capitol, I would just have somebody there with a Nazi flag every single time. And it's just like, yeah, that's the simplest, easiest way to go to.
It's like a $5 op.
Yeah. You just go down to like the local screen printing store. Toss on a JPG of a Nazi flag and then just go from there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's really easy, and it's like, you know, I don't know. It's supposed to basically color like this whole fucking thing, which I don't know what you guys were expecting of this whole thing, but it seems like a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be. But I mean, Bennett, do you feel like, are you, do you view it as like a, what's your take on the whole thing? Do you view it like going better than you imagined, or do you think this is like a, like, what do you make of the long-term effect of this?
Well, I mean, I've always been fascinated by the vulnerability of the arteries of mm-hmm. the economy mm-hmm. And how much power there is there. There was a friend of mine who was a DOD guy, and he went to this symposium where they were talking about, they were trying to red team terrorist attacks, meaning they were dreaming up terrorist attacks and what you would do about it. And like, apparently Tom Clancy was there. Apparently there was like fiction writers to like kind of creative juices, which I didn't know was a thing that they did. But
it reminds me of that TV show that used to come on like CBS or some shit called Castle. They had like a writer that was with a detective crew, and he would help them solve crimes because he just like wrote some crime novels before. He was like, oh, yeah, I got ideas.
Right. We got a right. Hannibal, in-house Hannibal.
apparently that is a thing that they do with these military fiction writers. And the scariest one that they came up with was basically like two guys on a bike with a submachine gun and just opening fire into traffic and stopping the road in rush hour on the highway. And the reason it was so scary was because it's this sprawling network that you can't possibly defend. And it's just so easy to screw with it. And so I know I'm like way off in the weeds here, but I guess I've been thinking about how truckers could peacefully stop mm-hmm. the economy for a long time. And there was a little bit of chatter about it right up until January 6th here.
Yeah.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, you know, I'm not real dialed into that scene or whatever. So I don't know why it didn't materialize here. But as soon as I heard that it was happening there, I was like, oh, well, you know, I guess I don't know. You don't want to like put down your marker and say like, yeah, I think this is going to be, you know, the big one. But I thought, if anything was going to move the needle, it would need to be somebody in that position, somebody with that kind of leverage.
Mm-hmm. And now seems like the perfect time because, A, we've been seeing over the past year and a half the stress on supply chains and how fragile they are, from the Suez Canal thing to right. the labor shortages to, you know, vaccine mandates causing people to either quit or lose their jobs, adding to the labor shortages, and then also just, you know, a bunch of other factors. And so I think right now it's a perfect time to take that leverage and put it on an already burgeoning system, you know, in its weakest points, which are in the infrastructure chains, because like we live in such an economy that's just so like demand economy. It's immediately, we need this thing right now, but we don't get it there until right when you need it. So we're not going to have stuff laying around. So we rely on truckers bringing in products, bringing in produce, bringing in whatever it is into urban cities, because, you know, they don't produce anything in most of those. So obviously truckers and people that are bringing in actual, you know, necessities into these centers where so many people live, that's a huge, huge place to target any type of civil movement, any type of workers movement, any type of, you know, disruption of the status quo.
I'm frankly amazed that there's as much slack in the system as there has been. Like, I mean, given how much disruption there's been just from like policy incompetence, let alone, mm-hmm. you know, like it's been amazing that like everybody still has had food, and it's been like expensive. And like, you haven't been able to buy furniture, but like, apparently we had a long way to fall before we actually ran into trouble. I think it's kind of a scare. It's kind of a near miss, I guess, but it makes you think about what could happen next.
Yeah. I guess we're like a supply heavy economy. So there's a lot of, I guess that's what provided some of the slack, and maybe, you know, the downturn of people losing jobs and everything that might have to do with, like, you know, people slowing on demand. So maybe it worked out. But I mean, even still, I mean, it's obviously bad here. But yeah, I do remember, as far as the truck thing and squeezing commerce, I do remember Braddock, Benjamin Braddock, who'd been on the show, like he had talked about the trucks strategy. I think it was, yeah, like you said, I think it was around Jan 6 he had brought that up. And I always thought that was a good idea. Because, I mean, like, that's also like an old, like, left-wing tactic, too, of, like, you know, in, you know, like, Latin America, whatever, just choking commerce, you know what I mean? Like, that's really, I mean, what, you know, in terms of leverage, like, what leverage do you really have? I mean, this is something that has clear leverage that can't really be denied. I mean, I don't know how far it'll go. I don't know what the long-term impact will be, but it's making a statement for sure.
I have to kind of assume that since, like, like you guys were talking about a second ago, I've like heard murmurs about a trucker, you know, thing for like a while now. And then it kind of finally happened here. There was a little bit going on with that in Australia too, like last year, wasn't there? And I mean, it was just being tuned out. I think the first response that I heard toward it was just being like, like, look at these, you know, completely delusional white trash truckers. Like, all right, that'll be the day. and judging by the fact that people are now like rolling out the Nazi flags and talking about, you know, obviously made up stories about them being mean to soup kitchen workers or something, like, I take that to mean that it's working.
Yeah, it's going pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the quest for media attention is kind of always a sucker's game because they can just not cover you. Right. But the piece of this that is, you know, actually, well, and I think there's also a huge optics difference between, like, if you want to cause pain, if you want to put stress on the system and exert leverage, you can cause an awful lot of financial pain in a really optics neutral way by just stopping a truck on the freeway. I mean, in terms of, like, if you want to call that damage, all the people that can't get to work, all the supplies that come in late, the things don't get made, you know, that's damage just as much as if you, you know, blew up a transformer or something, but that would be a totally different optics situation.
Yeah. You can do this without having to burn anything down. You don't have to loot any stores. You know what I mean? You can just turn a truck sideways on the highway. You could blockade a couple of roads, or you could just stop a couple of routes.
Then they have to talk about the violence of your nonviolence and twist themselves into pretzels. And yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. It is interesting to just think, like, I think how weakened labor has become and everything, how, like, you really have to dig down to the roots to find some method like this that's actually, like, effective, you know, truck drivers intervening. And if ever there was an event that would probably be the catalyst for union busting the fuck out of the truckers, this is probably going to be it. That's kind of a sad, I mean, hopefully that doesn't happen. I feel like it probably will, but yeah, it is funny too. I mean, I don't know. I'm not really seeing it, but I imagine that the leftists are like sounding like fucking Pinkertons over this.
Yeah, dude, no, they're out here talking about, those are just some petty bourgeois tyrants, small business owners, you know, owners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They just have like a soundboard of things to go to. They're just like, oh, just
literally
Nazi.
What's said every time.
Yeah, they just plug in the same old fucking things. So, like, yeah, it's, but you know, they're petite bourgeoisie or whatever. I mean, they're fucking truckers. I mean, what do you, I don't know what else to say about that. Like,
well, and they go both ways, right? It's because they're these lumped, well, they wouldn't call them lumpenproles because that would complicate it, but they're essentially like lumpenprole hillbillies. It's the way they want to frame them. Right. Like toothless, right. You know, no running water, no electricity, but they're also petty bourgeois. And, you know, like, it's,
So taking notes here, George Floyd, working class hero, truck drivers, lumpen proletariat.
Lumpen bouge.
Yeah, lumpen bouge.
Yeah, the lumpen thing is always like a convenient, it's a catch-all thing. And just like we're seeing fascism as a catch-all, like, you know, truck drivers that are like doing this, there's somehow fascism, which doesn't make any fucking sense. I mean, if you want to call it anything right wing, you'd call it libertarianism. You know, if you want to be like derisive or whatever, like, you wouldn't fucking call it fascist. How there's no authoritarian bent to it. But yeah, a lot of the shit they're saying
like
is just
major captains of industry who are like saying, you know, we're with these trucker guys and we're like you know, they're kind of like forcing their hand on the truckers to do that. It's just truckers coming together as a unit spontaneously and saying, hey, this shit is actually not cool, and pushing back against authoritarian measures. They're not actually acting upon anything authoritarian at all. They're just saying, hey, this is some draconian shit that we don't want any part in. You could say in a sense that they are more like an anti-fascist in actual practice than people who are against them right now.
Well, it's like when an Antifa would like, you know, fight people that didn't wear masks and be like, you guys are fascists for not wearing masks. Or just like that shit, you know, there's just some, I don't know, there's some misunderstanding of like basic political like literacy that's going on with all that.
It's an anti-mask action.
Yeah. But it's funny too, the violence aspect that you guys are talking about. Like Trudeau, he's talking about how it's violent and it's promoting hate. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's obvious. I mean, yeah, he's fleeing the scene when they pull up to the Capitol, whatever.
Which is fucking hilarious. Sweet.
Fucking yeah. Tight. Yeah, I love that shit. But and he's just a scumbag in general. Like I've always hated him. He's always been like one of these fucking, you know, World Economic Forum like mascots. Like he's like he's one of the pretty boys that's just like at the front of it all. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, and he did blackface, bro.
Yeah,
so exactly. You got all that against them.
So, in the marketplace here, blackface is worth at least three times less than the Nazi flag, which is good to know. I'm keeping notes here.
You gotta know the new calculus. But yeah, he's saying like it's violence, or whatever. And there's obviously the angle of like it's violence because promoting COVID is violence, is causing people to die. By not being pro mask mandate, you're pro people dying from the flu, you know, and
pro people dying of natural causes.
Yeah. And just well, like, you know, so no, go ahead.
I'm going to do the big sued thing where I cite a review of a book I haven't read, but there's a, Slate Star Codex. He has this article about, Red Plenty and the dream of kind of Soviet technocracy. And, that's all I've read, full disclosure, but he talks about how essentially, you know, we look at Marxism from this lens of like, it's all about the workers. And that was like the PR, but ultimately the thing that excited people in the teens and 20s, like the Aldous Huxleys, about socialism was technocracy. It was about bringing like science and math and statistics into policy instead of letting these things be like freewheeling market forces that are really inefficient and unequal, and sort of allowing the big industrial machinery to get involved in that process. And so I guess I just don't see a huge disconnect between, like, people talk about how it's funny that like Antifa's on the side of like JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs and Amazon and Facebook. Mm. And I basically what I see there is, I think Marx was sort of fundamentally right about the agglomeration of capital into fewer and fewer hands. I think he just didn't account for the fact that he was going to be famous and everybody was going to have read Marx. And so people were going to kind of do that consciously. And I think, the union of Marxists and capital in this quest to like heighten the contradictions and accelerate mm-hmm. toward the agglomeration of capital is not super surprising or counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, it's that accelerationist bend that are like, well, if Amazon owns everything, well, then there's only one company you have to take down. Or Jeff Bezos owns everything. Yes. You just got to get rid of Jeff Bezos. And you're like, yeah, dude, but then it'll be infinitely harder. What the fuck are you talking about? And we'll all live horrible lives.
I feel like I've read Jacobin articles that were basically like, yeah, small businesses are harder to regulate and harder to like bring under democratic control, and therefore they're anti-democratic and therefore they're fascist. And so like, yeah, anyway.
This was the whole discourse during the summer of love, summer before last, right? With mm-hmm. all the fucking Floyd riots and everything was the small business discourse. And yeah, I mean, I feel like it's... I would be far from the first person to like in this discussion, like bring up, you know, Marx's like position on free trade. Right. And that relationship with I mean, we're calling it like acceleration. It's kind of going back some way. I think it's an apt point, and it's not really all that surprising in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I guess a lot of like Alexei when he was on, like, talking about a lot of the Marxist thought is supposed to, you know, you have to develop capitalism. You have to, like, you know, get it to a solid point before you can convert it, you know, quote unquote. So I guess that all does make sense, that you kind of want it to, there's like some vague point where you want it to consolidate and prosper. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this whole thing, I mean, it's just funny. I mean, I don't know if it can apply to the U.S. That's the first thing I've been thinking about, because I think there's some like talk of like a U.S. convoy happening. I mean, there's a big distinction in the fact that like Canada had harsher COVID restrictions than us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's going to be a catalyst for people doing something more extreme.
Most of the red state people are living in jurisdictions where it's over, more or less.
Yes. Right. Right. So it's hard to have like a pressing feeling of like, we need to do something drastic if like it's not that bad around you.
I mean,
it's more like segmented.
As part of my business, I mean, I talk to guys about their like vax mandate situation all the time. And the impression that I'm getting is of a soft rollback. I think the jobs figures in the fall were really dramatic. I mean, there were two record-breaking, like, they measure how many people quit. And there, I think it was August and September, or September and October, were both record breakers for how many
resignation
jobs. Yeah. And you could see that in the aggregate of just people I was talking to, just anecdotally. It was like, oh yeah, they pushed the date, or they started taking everybody's exemptions, or they said, we need to talk to legal and we'll keep you in the loop and we'll let you know. And they never got back to us. And I think that was how they sort of step back from the cliff, is everybody just decided not to take it all that seriously.
Sorry, you got cut out.
Oh, where'd you lose me?
Oh, you were saying that people were not taking it serious.
Oh, that was the last thing I said.
Oh, okay.
You had a powerful cadence going on, so if there's more
sorry.
To come. But yeah, I kind of think that's probably the case. I've been seeing where I think that I saw an article at New York City repeal its mask mandate, or maybe the state of New York did something like that. I'm seeing Denver let their mask, they're going to let their mask mandate lapse, and they're also taking away their like statewide mandate on vaccine requirements and public gatherings of like X amount of people or more. So I think there's like a soft rollback happening. I don't want to be too optimistic about it and then just be shut down though. But I do feel like hopefully things are kind of changing in that way as things kind of are falling apart with the narrative as a whole.
Yeah. And the problem with that is it leaves that card in their hand anytime they want to play it, as opposed to if they say, no, this is how we're going to do it. And then people say, go to hell. You know, then mm-hmm. you have to actually fight it out and make a decision, and it's conclusive. But this soft rollback thing is like, well, as soon as they think it's politically tenable to do it again, and not even just that, but all elements of this, including like the surveillance and the tracing and the, you know, the interference in people's like healthcare decisions professionally, like every piece of that they can still politically get away with, they're going to hold on to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it reminds me a lot of the rent stuff, how people were talking about, you know, there's this, you know, the levy is going to break at some point here, and then that will result in, you know, mass mobilization. And I mean, what basically happened was just that the pressure was let out slowly, spread out across different areas. And like, yeah, like the hemorrhaging definitely happened, but the hemorrhaging is staggered, and it basically just disperses all that pressure that could be used. And so, yeah, like I do think that, you know, the tale of two countries type deal, where like red America has been pretty much done. I think about like talking with like the good old boys, right? And Marek is, you know, just always like, it blows his mind that we still wear masks anywhere. And like, that definitely stings whenever I hear that. And yeah, I think it probably does take away a lot of that energy, right?
I mean, I'm in glow in the dark Northern Virginia, and you hardly see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And them kind of letting the gas off a little bit and cooling it down takes away a lot of any type of fervor or any type of leverage that the opposition may have, because it kind of just takes the wind out of the sails a little bit, because it's like, yeah, we got everyone kind of fired up about this, about we need to change this COVID stuff. We need to, you know, make mass action against COVID mandates. And then they're like, oh, well, actually, we're just not going to do the mandates anymore, so never mind. And you're like, yeah, but you did actually for a fucking year. And in a lot of places, you still are. And it ruined like lots of people's lives. And that's not something that just like is going to go away because now we're, you know, you're taking your foot off the gas a little bit. But an issue is that it does kind of have that appearance, and people just kind of will stop to care about or stop caring about it so much. Or if they were starting to get a little bit worked up on it, but they weren't fully opposition towards like lockdowns and stuff yet, now is the time they'll see that it's more justified because, oh, look, it's not going to be here forever. They're taking it away. They were just doing it because it was what was best. So it is frustrating to see that it's going to be just kind of swept under the rug, I feel like, overall.
And the blue pill framing of that, right, is that's the system working. That's the democratic process. People get mad and you walk it back and you step down and it's okay. And I think but you're totally right that like because they've still got that card in their back pocket to play, it's clearly a lot of this is they need to dial this back in a hurry so that everybody's forgotten about it before the midterms. And
yes.
I mean, that's what I see is like it needs to be a distant memory by the midterms.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I can't say I'm sure it wouldn't happen, but it would be so funny if like the Democrat Party tried to like hot potato it and try to change the optics to be like, obviously the Republicans want to keep this going. And we've always been against this thing that everyone hates now. Honestly, I can't dismiss that out of hand because it's always a race to the bottom. But
I wouldn't put it past them at all, man.
Well, I mean, given that this has the potential to be just like the biggest fucking stigma in politics pretty soon, it's entirely likely, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the midterms are a factor in that. And, I mean, even in like places in America where there's like no masks and no vax mandates and all that, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's still irrevocable damage that's permanent. There's still lost jobs, businesses, livelihoods, you know, all these supply chain issues. There's so many externalities from all this that affect everybody. The wealth transfer, the consolidation, everything is like, you know, even if there's no masks where you're at or they, you know, one summer they say, like last summer when the vax comes out, they say, you don't need it anymore. And then it comes back, you know, there's still permanent effects that kind of bleed out into everything. But yeah, it definitely seems contingent on the midterms. It definitely seems like, I mean, this shit is just unpopular. I mean, they always frame it as being against this stuff as fringe. Trudeau's saying that a lot about the this whole convoy, even though there's like fucking thousands and thousands of people. And they're always saying, oh, there's like, you know, 90% of the truckers are vaxxed, or, you know, in America, that's always a thing. They always say, oh, we got so many people vaccinated. And Prudential has actually made this point. He was saying how, like, when that Supreme Court decision happened, he was like, yeah, this is good, but like, they already like got record vaccinations in the interim. You know what I mean? So like there's sort of like that aspect of it where like, you know, they frame it as like you're fringe for being against it if you're vaxxed, but then they don't factor in the fact that like they put a gun to people's heads and was like, you're going to lose your job unless you get vaxxed. Like, yeah, maybe there's people who got vaxxed who like who believe in the vax, who don't believe in vax mandates. Like they just sort of like kind of like, you know, blur that whole distinction.
I mean, that's a lot of what but I've been seeing a whole lot of articles with interviews from truckers in Canada that are at the convoy. And there's a lot of people who are vaccinated there. But they are there because they're against the mandates, because they don't see that's right. And they don't want to participate in a country where that's just allowed to happen and people can just be forced into getting treatment that they don't want to have to get. And they're not allowed to make their own autonomous decisions with their body.
I mean, there's a huge problem in, at least in the US, and I'm sure it's true in Canada as well, that, I mean, truckers tend to be old. they tend to be, and like, it's sort of, they're having a hard time getting young guys to do it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, of the cohort that like vaccination probably makes sense for, like, yeah, truckers probably should, a lot of them should probably get vaccinated in terms of like the risk reward trade-off. And so, yeah, it really is fundamentally an ideological question, a question about who gets to decide, not so much a question of, you know, is this going to give me a third limb or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just funny. Yeah. That they've always used it as like a narrative thing for like who's in the fringe and all that. And, but like you said, like, you know, they keep this in the back pocket, you know, and maybe for the midterms. And like Slav said, too, like, you know, they're attributing a lot of this pullback from to Omicron. So, you know, if they're keeping it in the back pocket, they might say, you know, we pulled it back for Omicron and, you know, we handled the virus. So vote for us. And then once midterms pass, they'll say, oh, there's a new variant. This one's actually serious. This is like, you know, the doomsday variant or whatever. And then go back to what we were doing before. So that's always, if they're tying things to variants specifically, then that means it's always in the back pocket because, you know, at any point they could change what the meaning of COVID is or the threat level or whatever.
Or, I mean, it doesn't even have to be COVID. They got fucking Bill Gates on the news talking about we got to be ready for the next pandemic, the next thing that comes. I mean, he's cooking it up. Right. It's coming. It doesn't matter if it's a variant or what, dude, but it's coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know if. Well, I mean, obviously it's all subject to change. But yeah, I mean, that's all kind of it came like kind of right after the Rogan stuff was happening, which is like, so what?
No, go on. Sorry.
Well, this Rogan stuff kind of happened like right before it. And I mean, Rogan's just his name and fucking Tucker and fucking Greenwald are just always in constant fucking rotation trending of being canceled again and again and again. It's just fucking like it's boring. It's just like, I don't know how many times they can do this. Rogan's like fucking canceled again. And I mean, it's not really like, I'm never really certain why exactly, but I guess it's because of the mass formation thing and like the other episode he did that was like anti-vaccine or whatever, or the lab theory stuff. So he's just like getting like hammered with this Neil Young bullshit. And
his most recent episode was Jordan Peterson, and everyone hated that too. Like everyone gets very frustrated with him anytime. So that I feel like probably just kind of got people a little fired up. And then they were just like, you know what? Yeah, fuck this dude, his anti-vaccine bullshit. He's having all these horrible guests on. He's saying all this bullshit. When in reality, he's just like a normal dude just trying to like have conversations with some people. And then the interesting thing, though, is that you were saying how that came right before this trucker thing. But really, I've been hearing about the trucker convoy for, you know, a week or so at least. They've been driving up to Ottawa from all over the country. So there was some murmuring going on early in the week and late last week. And so really, it's happening pretty much at the same time as all of that. And it's interesting that it's Neil Young and that the next biggest name who recently said they were going to take their music off and did take their music off Spotify because Joe Rogan's on there was Joni Mitchell. And they're both Canadians. So two huge Canadian pop stars and celebrities right now are making news headlines all over some non-event bullshit while there's actually real news taking place in Ottawa that's not making so many headlines and kind of being a little bit drowned out, overshadowed by that, at least here in the States, because it doesn't really affect us as directly. It's a little bit more like symbolic in a way for us down here, kind of saying, hey, look, we support that. If that can happen up there, it could happen down here. And that's a good, dissident stance to take. And it's not really getting coverage down here.
I mean, speaking of undead boomers, I feel like the Canada coverage and the Neil Young thing was about as loud as Madonna's ass on the TL the other day. Like that, those were like basically equivalent. I found about as many people talking about that, and I just thought like, we're never going to be rid of these people. They're going to be just injected with all kinds of preservatives. You know, my grandchildren are going to still be watching Madonna strip.
Yeah.
Oh, I know, dude. I think the difficult thing is just like needing to be reminded of the fact that like Neil Young has been for so long just like a complete ball of cringe and is just this miserable little malignant person. Mm-hmm. Harvest and On the Beach, good records, right? But basically everything else he's contributed to the culture generally is just so fucking annoying, dude. Oh my god, it's pretty funny. I can't say that I care too much about the Spotify thing going on because it is just like the kind of lib thing of just being like, oh dude, like the market has spoken and it supports our side, and then the other side being like, no, this market has spoken and it supported our side, and it's just like, this is like the framing, like the basic premises here are just like retarded to me, but it is funny to like see somebody like Neil Young, you know, be a little fucking cunt and then just dive into the fucking pool and just slam into the bottom of an empty pool, you know, like just kind of fuck himself up. I mean, I don't know if he's really fucking himself over, but it seems a little embarrassing, I'll say.
Well, here's one of the best things about Neil Young and this whole him being against the anti-COVID and anti-vaccine misinformation thing is that recently he sold the rights to his music to a company in a group called Hypnosis, like Hypnosis, Hypnosis Media. Mm-hmm. And essentially they're owned by Blackstone Company, and Blackstone got $1 billion from fucking Pfizer. And they're like, and so essentially you keep kind of just peeling back the onion layers and you just get to fucking Pfizer. It's just like every single time.
Blackstone is the connecting tissue for everything. Yeah. It seems like that's really funny though. I heard somebody was saying like somebody on the right was like saying that like he's got connections to Pfizer, and I was just like, damn man, is that true? Because that seems too on the nose.
Amazing.
But why not? Why not at this point? That makes sense.
I may have misrepresented that a little bit, but what happened exactly is that, because I just looked it up, the Pfizer, former Pfizer CEO is the chairman of Blackstone, and Blackstone owns Hypnosis, who just bought Neil Young's music. So it all just goes right back to Pfizer. Pfizer didn't directly donate $1 billion or anything, but they're tied directly to it.
I mean, it's a small club. All these guys know each other. They're all fucking each other. They're all at the same.
They're all fucking each other.
They're all in the same cabal meetings. Like,
well, and to be honest, it doesn't really even seem like in all of this, it doesn't really seem like Neil Young has membership in the club. It kind of just seems like he's kind of like a dupe. You know?
Yeah, I mean, like Blackstone and Pfizer and all that.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
I mean, it's funny too when they're saying like, you know, the trucker thing is AstroTurf or whatever, because this Neil Young thing seems AstroTurf. It seems like somebody like picked him up and was like, yo, we need you to do this. We need you to fall on your sword for this. And like, you know what I mean? Because he's just kind of doing it by himself. I mean, now there's like, none, it seems like it didn't work because Spotify was like, all right, Joe Rogan is the biggest fucking show. Like, he's bigger than Tucker, like, and like the next couple. And Tucker's the biggest one out of like all the like legacy media people. So like, you know what I mean? Like he runs over all of them. So, you know, it's back to that thing of like what's fringe and what's popular. Like he's the most popular one. They're not going to fucking ditch him for fucking Neil Young. No offense to Neil. I don't know shit about him. I don't know any of his music.
I mean, just listen to those two albums. Maybe a little Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Then you're done. Yeah. Three albums tops.
I mean, I think it could be as easy as like his publicist told him it would be a smart move. And also, you know, his new record label potentially says like, you know, we've got a strategy to keep you selling, even if you lose a little bit of money on this, and it'll make you relevant. It'll get you in the news. Like I think there's actually like a business case for Neil Young to be made here. Like it doesn't necessarily mean that he's like, I mean, he might be being like a dick, but it doesn't mean that he's like being stupid, if that makes sense.
Sure. I mean, if there's like one lesson to be learned, I guess one of many lessons to be learned from like the last 4 years, it's that this kind of like, it's like a whole publicist, like like a video game, like a progression along a skill tree. Like you can just go down the like quasi activist route if you're kind of a has-been, right? Like we were talking about Madonna and just like a lot of these kind of old, not really relevant anymore celebrities. Like just like, I don't know, like, you know, the last 4 years, you could just like say fuck Trump. And then it's kind of just like your shoe in for at least a couple goes around the take mill. It's pretty funny. It's probably not a bad call. I feel like this might have, I mean, I don't know. I don't really see how the libs are handling this, but I feel like this might have not been the most successful one. But
no. I mean, yeah. I mean, maybe he's getting his profile raised. He's trending. It's just funny because I was watching like the news for like a second and like they're just like playing his music. Like, hey, don't you just love that music? Don't you really love? Remember this album? It feels so very like, you know what I mean? And then the next breath they're saying this Conway shit is AstroTurf. I'm like, yo, Neil Young is AstroTurf. Like,
you know what I mean? Like, Fed Post quotes, Neil Young is AstroTurf.
Yeah, that whole album is fucking AstroTurf.
To be one of our next t-shirts.
I mean the whole culture is built around the concept of being the rebel and overturning the status quo, and they've just been in charge of the status quo forever, and there's nowhere to go.
Yep. It's funny too because it does seem like it failed because I mean they said the market went down, but I mean they said Spotify went down, but the whole market went down.
Yeah,
so that was kind of easily just like swept aside. And now I saw they were saying like we're gonna get Bruce Springsteen and this Jovi, I don't know what the fuck that guy is, and then they're gonna get Meghan Markle and Prince Harry's podcast to pull out. It's just so funny, like the people they reach for, they're like they're gonna reach for Ghislaine next or like Weinstein.
Ghislaine isn't gonna be grooming kids on Spotify anymore. Can you just like really fast try to imagine the kind of fucking malignant human being that would listen to fucking Meghan Markle's podcast?
Yeah, that's like, sick.
Choose to do the holy fuck, dude.
Sick. Yeah, I didn't even know they had a podcast. I mean, like, that's some twisted shit, man.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
The common denominator there is like nobody in that group is on the grind. You know what I mean? Like nobody there is like trying to hustle, trying to get their name out, trying to like.
Yeah,
they're hungry. You know what I mean? It's old people who are tired and worn out, and or people who are like famous for something else, and you know, like it's not. It's not anybody who actually cares about like the bottom line here. It's somebody who's working the NGO skill tree where they go become an activist to try to, you know, grip onto some relevance.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like late game, it's really good to multi-class into that. Just like to get a little right. Get like a little bit more relevance, just kind of really ring it out. But yeah, I mean like it's like at a certain point if you're kind of just like an established thing, then you're just kind of like dead weight that can get thrown around in the direction of people that are actually like operators, you know? So, you know, you retire. It's like the music equivalent of like retiring and then getting a book deal as like a politician or something, right? You're just like, all right, I'm just going to kind of milk this now and like keep up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Like Clinton, like Goldman Sachs speaking fees and Obama's books and all that. It's like, yo, you're already like, you know, just coasting off the residuals or whatever.
Yeah. Next thing you know, they'll give Neil Young a master class.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of Amazon third party book sales. Like I'll go to an estate sale and like this one guy had like all these first edition, like, James Bond novels from the 60s and like a bunch of sci-fi stuff, really, really good stuff. And one thing that I've noticed is all of these political, like, you know, graduating from politics to a book deal books, they're worth zero. They cost like $35 and they're worth nothing resale because nobody actually reads them. Some people said that's like money laundering maybe. And like, I don't know enough to say either way, but like, there's clear, like something about that market is a little bit artificial. Like people are not buying those books to read them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. All the shit that ends up like New York bestseller and all that. Like it feels like they just hand it out to certain people and like, I'm sure there's people that just buy shit to just to have it on the coffee table or just fucking
I feel like the late career book deal is sort of just like an open sign for people to like flip to show that they're like down to just do like speaking events and shit like that. Like no one buys these fucking things. They're basically just like it's
a business card.
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe there's like some really specific, like, you know, money laundering or something going on. But yeah, like
I believe that
it probably that makes sense, is.
Honestly. Yeah.
But yeah, they fucking Henry Kissinger publishing. If I did it.
If I did it. Yeah. That is. Yeah, that's amazing. But yeah, I mean, this some, yeah, I'm trying to think of like, yeah, I mean, people get rehab. Yeah, you get a press run. You get to do a press run, all that shit. Yeah, laundering. I never thought about it like that. But yeah, laundering sounds like, yeah, some Blackstone money, some under the table money. You just like wash that shit on some book that, you know, Libs get to brag about being halfway through or whatever.
Oh, I read the Michelle Obama autobiography. So, you know, when people say all those things about white people, it actually doesn't apply to me for the next 6 months until I get the next booster book. Then I need to read up.
Yeah, you can come over and see it on my bookshelf.
Yeah. Absolute sick freaks. I'm sorry.
But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, we should talk about the other thing, which, you know, which I know you've written about on your Substack and all that, and about you know, having kids in the modern age, which, you know, we haven't talked about this in a while. I think, you know, personally, the thing I get frustrated about is like, well, personally, I don't want to have kids. That's just my personal choice. But like, it is obviously a big problem if most people want to have kids, which is most people, and they can't, or they feel like they can't. That is a big fucking problem for all of us. Obviously, yeah. It need not be explained. But I think a big reason why is because people feel this financial squeeze. I mean, there's a million reasons. Sure. Like just, you know, like maybe dread of the future. I'm sure if they're leftists, they're worried about climate change or whatever the fuck. And, you know, people got their own reasons for like long term concerns. But I think the financial one is like the most big apolitical common denominator one. It's just like that shit is expensive. We have birth control. You know, we have that because that's like, you know, again, cost benefit. It's cheaper to just do that. So like I feel like that's a major reason. And I feel like when I hear like, when I talk to like right leaning people about this, it kind of frustrates me because that's not really acknowledged. It's sort of just like, just have a kid, just, you know, just do it. It's good or whatever. It's based to have a kid. So I noticed that you were like, you know, addressing the fact that that is a concern. So I thought that was interesting. So I was just wondering what you think of that.
I mean, is it expensive? That depends on how much you care about doing it. And it also depends on how you're willing to do it. I mean, a lot. So like our kids are not expensive in dollars, particularly. They're expensive in my wife's time. They're expensive in the way that we choose to live, the way that we orient our lives around them. We make a lot of decisions where there are some alternative decisions where we could be making more money, if that makes sense. But it's not, you know, I'm paying my kid tax $50 a day or whatever. Like some of these projections are like the way they dollarize the cost of having kids. They really are obscene. And I think that's some of the reaction that you're hearing from the right of like, it's not that expensive is to say like these numbers are goofy. Like if I'm looking at what I'm actually spending, because they do like they incorporate like, you know, mom's lost wages and everything else. Or it's like, yeah, if you want to have four kids and mom works, then you're paying like $3,500 a month in childcare. But nobody's doing that. Like that's not how it works. If you're going much past two, mom's staying at home almost always. And I think there's a lot of misleading messaging on that topic. But also it's about how bad do you want it? And like, why do you care? Like, why do you, like, you mentioned, like, it's based to have kids. Like, that's not a reason. Like, no,
yeah.
Nobody's having kids because it's based.
That's not a good motivating factor at all. Like, that only lasts for so long. Hey, yeah.
It's way too hard to do something like that for me, you know?
It's like, it's like your dad looking at you and being like, I'll never forget the day I locked eyes with you and you were first born. And I knew in that moment that I would have cred and internet clout on Twitter.
There was this hippie relative of mine that gave us some noise about how we were killing the planet with our kids. And I told my wife, like, I'm going to have like 5 kids that we didn't plan for just out of spite. And I'm going to explain that to them. Like, you're here just to own Auntie so-and-so.
Right.
No, but yeah. Like it has to be central to who you are. It's a huge undertaking.
Yeah. I mean, I always, you know, that internet cloud thing, I mean, that's only applicable to people who are online. And then there's, if you're looking at it from the left perspective, it's like, oh, every kid you have is destroying, you know, a seagull or a beach or something.
50 cubits of carbon.
The fuck? Whatever. I mean, I don't know how they come up with these numbers, but like, yeah. But anyways, but like, yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's all very cerebral. And I said this when we had Ghost Jail or whatever, because we were talking about this. Like, I don't think it's very cerebral. Historically, it's not a thing you think about. It's an accident. I think that's the other thing why I think some of the modern element of it factors in, where it's like, you know, people weren't planning to have kids. It was just accidents. It was just like, oh, fuck, I guess we're having a kid now, you know. But now that there's like contraceptives and like all that, like, I think people view it as like, well, it's easier just to buy the contraceptives than to. And look, I get what you mean in terms of like inflating the cost of having a kid. I don't really know. I mean, I could believe that. But I still think there's a broader thing of like, in general, wages are going down or stagnant, and cost of living is going up, which we're seeing now, like very heightened now. Yeah. And we're living in a world where, like, you know, two parents have to work, you know. That's another problem, which, you know, I think a lot of people have issue with. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, that I think that's where it's like broader economic trends that sort of,
yeah, like
it's not that it's expensive on paper. It's just like it's the conditions around you are making it harder, basically.
And it ties into the education thing we were talking about earlier, right? Like, if you want to be able to provide them with what you think is a proper education or something, you may have to try to take them out of public school. I mean, ideally. And then that's another.
You're still paying the county taxes. Like, you're still paying.
Exactly. Right.
So you're getting, you're losing, like, you're getting double dipped on in that sense. And also you're having, you know, you give up time in order to homeschool. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors, like a myriad of different ones that make it a little bit more difficult financially or materially to conceptualize having a child. And I think that, yeah, like, a lot of people have them on accident too. And then, you know, then the planning aspect kind of goes out the window, and it's less about, well, did we feel like we're set up to it? And it's more about, how do we make this fucking work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's true. Although I think there's also an element of, well, so, okay. So this may illuminate the issue somewhat. So, in my church, pretty much anywhere you go, if you're having a baby, particularly if you're having your first baby, the church is going to throw you a baby shower. Like, the lady who's in charge of that is going to throw you a baby shower, and you're not going to buy clothes until like kid number 3 is like 2 or 3 years old. Like, somebody is going to be just throwing clothes at you. Like, I got to get these out of my closet. I got to get rid of these clothes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, right. You know, if you're not like fashion forward or whatever about your friggin' baby clothes, you know what I mean? Like, you can make that work for a long time. And in terms of having short-term childcare that you trust, having like a lady in the ward come watch your kids, in terms of, you know, just the activities that make, well, like, entertainment and getting kids together to do stuff. Like, a lot of what parents do is they're like, you know, I don't want my kid to just come home from school and play video games. So he's got to be in hockey, and hockey mm-hmm. pads are like $700. I don't know. I've never done that, but like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like they've got to be yeah. in all these expensive programs to make up for the fact that there's no social weft anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
right.
And so to the extent that exists, like basically, people in my church are admittedly playing on easy mode a little bit. And the calculus is different for somebody who's really kind of in the atomized individual world.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was about to say, is that I think that your point of bringing up the church highlights an important part of it, is that the importance of community in raising yeah, children. Yeah. That it's yeah. not necessarily an individualist endeavor. It's not something that you undertake on your own. And if no. you're forced to undertake it on your own, then it becomes a much harder thing. And the importance of community is so vital in raising children that that's another, you know, factor that's causing, I think, some people to not really think that they could be able to do it, because a lot of people are more atomized now than they have been before. If they're not a member of a church or something, or some sort of like, who knows, like intramural group or any type of organization yeah, that binds them. Sorry, what was that?
I was just going to say, like, you were sort of struggling to think of anything else. It's mostly churches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. If you're not a member of like a church or some sort of community of that variety, then you're going to be shut off from that kind of thing. And I saw something like on Facebook that was advertised, an Economist article, and they were talking about how 15% of men in America over the age of 35 don't have any close personal friends. So when you're living in a reality where there's so many people that are so atomized and so isolated that just even the prospects of being able to have a kid in the first place, how are they going to go out and do that? And then also, do they even have a support system to help them through that process? That's an issue as well.
No, yeah, I had several years of like, all right, I've married this beautiful woman. We're having kids. We're able to have kids. We can afford it. This is awesome. Like, I felt like I'd won. Like I punched my ticket. And then my daughter didn't have to get very old before I started going like, oh, geez, she's got to find somebody. And all my other kids have to find somebody. And mm-hmm. they have to have friends. And their friends have to be not like poisonous little monsters raised by like the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
And the problem became like geometrically more complex.
Yeah. I take your point because, you know, like they say, it takes a village and all that. Aside from all the economic conditions that are changing, there's a social aspect, which, I mean, everybody is getting more alienated. I mean, before COVID, more people were living alone. And that's just the nature. I mean, we all know this. I mean, it's just the nature of like neoliberalism and capitalism is just, you know, to isolate everyone. And at that point, whatever economic hardships could be coming up, they could be offset if you do have a community that's sort of like, you know, kind of trading off the weight a little bit. Which makes a lot of sense.
Even for us, it's getting harder. I mean, it's still possible, but it's getting harder. And there's a G.K. Chesterton poem about a little girl's red hair. He was furious that this little girl had been had her head shaved because of lice. And he was like, I'm not going to live in a world with lice, and because little girls should have their beautiful hair. And therefore, we're going to like burn it all down. I'm not quoting it. You have to read it, but it's a great poem. And I think a lot about, I want my daughter to have good friends and good boys to date. And I want my boys to have good girls to date and good friends. And I want my wife to have friends to fold laundry with and like, and be involved in life together. And whatever has to fall apart for that to materialize, like, I'm down, let's do it. Like, that's that the only extent to which I'm like an extremist is like, that's what I want. And I really don't care what else has to burn down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I think that's a good point. Cause we were talking on an episode before about how, dealing with people's children is such a trigger point for people because it's kind of a door to mobilization because it gives them something that's so much greater than maybe themselves or their conception of their broader community. When you have another living person that you're responsible for, and then you start having people that are fucking with them, and then you're going to say, whoa, 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 you're not going to fuck with my kid. You're not going to fuck with, you know, the the reality that is laid out before my kid or the future that my kid has. And we were talking about what kind of drives people to be mobilized in regards to the trucker stuff. And I think that people with children are especially politically motivated by stuff that affects their children. And that's kind of one reason why we've been seeing with the education stuff, these moms coming out to these PTA meetings and everything. It may not even be so much that they're interested in the specific literature that's being given or the individual phrases that are being taught, but more so an overarching desire to protect their children from what they deem as, you know, things that are going wrong. And that's really the only outlet to be able to express that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the school board stuff is such a great example, right? I think about that headline of like, parents think that they have a say in what their children are taught in curriculum. They don't, right? And, and I think the funniest thing is I'd love to just, you know, poll the average person and say, you know, what do you have more of a stake in, the future of liberal democracy or your children? Right. Like, and I'm sure that like op-ed writers of the New York Times would probably be not super stoked about the answers you would get.
You look at how they vote. You look at how they vote. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the map of like, if only married women voted, if only married women with children voted. It's dramatic. It's very, very dramatic. It's more dramatic than the racial division. It's more dramatic. It's much more dramatic than the gender divide. It's do you have a family? Do you have kids? Do you have a stake in the survival, not of the system, but of the culture that system is sort of riding on top of and parasitizing?
Yeah, right. In that sense, it's very politically productive for, you know, the power it be to keep people from having children or envisioning a future where they can have children because it keeps them, you know, a little bit less engaged.
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you mean to tell me that the powers that be want me to be like an unrooted urbanite? Say it ain't so.
Shocking.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's the last thing anybody's going to kill or die for right now. I mean, it's not religion. It's not politics. It's that stuff is all played. The only thing that's left is your kids, and people still will lie down in traffic for their kids.
I saw a video just now of someone who lit themselves on fire to protest the vaccine mandate and them losing their job, which I know that's a little off topic. But that's something else that can motivate people too. Something that's like that stark and materially shattering for you.
I'm just picturing some beardo like Brooklynite dirtbag left podcaster just like walking by like a burning body and just being like, touch grass maybe? I don't know.
Putting a mask on him.
Oh, you know your carbon footprint right now while you're burning or smoldering.
Holy shit.
Yeah. No, I get what you mean. Like, yeah. Oh, I get what you mean. Cause like, yeah, I mean, I personally, I don't want to have kids, but like, I get what you mean. Cause like, I noticed this on the left where there's this sort of like this, there's either like pure hedonism that can only happen from not having kids and the nihilism, obviously, or just like, yeah, just weird, like consumer shit or just weird. Like, yeah, that all that stuff is sort of, you can't really be too much like that if you have a kid. I mean, it's just a natural block against it.
Have you guys read or are you, well, have you guys heard of The Two Income Trap, Elizabeth Warren's book?
No.
So it's back when she was still saying interesting things. But basically it makes the case that the entry of women into the workforce has been a disaster for women in particular, because virtually all of the additional wealth that they bring into their households is spent on, well, since I'm not going to be home to take care of my kids, they need to be in a really safe neighborhood and a really good school system. So there's this race to the bottom, this fight over the positional good of who gets to live in the good school district. And so they get more expensive houses. They get a second car. They pay through the nose on childcare. And essentially, when you look at all of the feminist messaging of the last 50 years at least, you think about who's pushing it. And it's like, well, if women stay at home, their labor is not taxable. It's not generating revenue on anybody's balance sheet. They're cooking meals at home. They are working for people that they care about in this reciprocal, illegible way that the state can't see and the corporations can't see. And any kind of bond like that that can't be pulled apart into its constituent elements and marketized and monetized is an enemy to this system. And there's huge amounts of money in finding it. And like you look at Japan right now, and they've got every component of the dating experience has like a dollar value on it. You can go to a particular club and get that piece of the dating experience, whether it's like weird sex stuff or whether it's like you want to lay your head in a woman's lap. Like it's all pieced apart and commoditized. And that's what I think has happened with everything that used to be constituted homemaking.
That's fucking based Warren. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of surprised you said that. Elizabeth Warren. Yeah, you said Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah, like former Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren. It's wow. So I did a little write-up on it that I can send you guys, but it's pretty striking. I mean, so a lot of that is my elaboration on her central premise. Like she's still in this very viewing it from the feminist frame, which is like this is bad for women. But yes. Like I agree, but it's also like terrible for everybody. Like it's been a disaster, catastrophe.
Right, it's obviously much more like holistic than just
nothing of what it does to the labor market, where you've got twice as many butts in seats willing to do things for the same amount of money. Like, yeah, no kidding, corporations love that. No kidding, corporations want your little girl to grow up to be a girl boss. Like, why wouldn't they? They don't care about, like, the corporation isn't a person, doesn't have a soul. It can't care about like the future of the country. It cares about quarterly earnings. And so everything is oriented toward that.
Yeah, you enter the economy as a resource at that point, rather than being someone who extracts value and resource.
Right. Yeah, I never thought of it like that. Yeah, it's like an untapped labor, the natural the old childcare of the home. It's just like, oh, that's a lot of like hours that like. Just not in the economy that we could just,
And that's part of the funny, capitalist grift of it, right? Is being like, ladies, all these years that you've been, working for your family, these little bald headed freeloaders that are sapping your fucking value that some people call infants, they're exploiting you because this is unpaid labor basically. Right. And it's like, it's like staying at home and like building your family. It's just like, isn't completely commodified. So yeah. So being taken away from that and then being able to like, wage cuck for the man is super
empowering.
Exactly. It's like when you actually just lay it out, it's the most brain dead worldview. Like it's not even hard to completely lay out. And dude, I think I remember like Amber Frost from Chapo talking about this a few years ago, and I think in like Jacobin or something. And yeah, I mean, you're not hearing much of that anymore, of course. But yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, it's not a very complicated case to make, but. People fail to do it nonetheless.
You look at there's lots of reasons why wages have flatlined and while GDP has gone up, productivity have gone up, but it does roughly track the entry of women into the workforce. And there's a certain story you can tell that makes sense of like, yeah, the companies make a lot more money, but the return to labor went way down because all of a sudden there was this enormous entry into the labor market. And yeah, it's a very easy case to make, and it's not, it shouldn't be political, but it is.
I think the thing is that there's the argument, of course, that there's women who don't want their financial livelihood tethered to somebody else, because not everybody's going to have a family and not everybody's going to get married. That's just reality.
Bap in a recent podcast was talking about petty nationalisms like Catalan nationalism or Basque nationalism or Scottish nationalism and how they're used by larger entities to break in pieces and consume smaller entities. So like Scottish nationalism being used to interfere with Brexit, for instance. And I think that you're seeing the same like liberation struggle being deployed as a weapon to, you know, because these families are these intransigent, immovable political units that could be exploited much more effectively if they could be divided against each other. And so all of this messaging has gone into alienating women from their husbands and vice versa, poisoning kids against their parents. And it's all about how do we break all of these nodes of power apart and take that power for ourselves? How do mm-hmm. we become the guy that acculturates your children? How do we be the person who validates your wife and pays her bills? Like, how do we assert ourselves into this power structure?
Yep. And remove anything else that takes that attention. Like the state essentially wants you to have no idols before them, right? And it's including your children and your family.
Right.
Yeah. And again, it also like it reinforces the idea that like the market, you know, which you know pays your wife or whatever for her labor is a more like a deserving and just mechanism than like the relationship between you and your wife, like you as the primary breadwinner, and then you know coming back and you know she's not being paid by market forces for her labor. It's something being mediated between the husband and the wife, and you know obviously. Obviously, it would be more just if market mechanisms were to get involved in the relationship. And that's like anti-human. That's psychotic. That's it's a pretty good, honestly, it's a pretty good fucking example of just neoliberalism and just like the horror in that.
Yeah, that's straight up demonic shit, dude. That's like Capital shit. As an actual demon.
Yeah. So
all right, that was part one of our episode. If you'd like to listen to part two, you can find that at patreon.com/fedpost. Thanks for listening.